Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives,
to the outer reaches of Xenos infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, and we are exceedingly excited to bring you our hot takes of 9th edition 40k.
What we know so far, yes.
What we know so far. Hot takes reaction podcast.
Indeed. Well, it's with all these things, it's like, I want to know more.
But... Well, exactly. I guess we could pretend that we held off releasing this until now so that we could get more information so that we could give you an informed view rather than just mindless excitement. But the real reason is we were trying to be mindlessly excited, but we were also recording a video of us being mindlessly excited at the same time. So our mindless excitement recording was half, like 90% mindless excitement, and like maybe more than 10%. Actually, I've got my percentages wrong, but there was a lot of percentages of Steve and Dan desperately trying to work out whether, you know, Dan's hair looked good enough on camera and, you know, all sorts of technical difficulties and audio. Yeah, very, very strange. But the upshot is you will have hopefully seen our little cameo on Warhammer Community. We were privileged to be in the reaction video for the 40k reveal on the Twitch stream.
Yep, so all that work on your hair was worth it.
Exactly. I looked amazing. Steve, you were the second best good looking podcast co-host from Ashes of the Imperium, and that is a noble position to be in when in such stiff competition.
I know my place.
But yes, enough of that. We are kind of re-recording our thoughts on 9th edition, and with it being a week or so on, we are now obviously doing it from a slightly better informed perspective, which kind of probably means that we're maybe adding something extra, because or adding something more to what everyone else kind of talked about in the first few days. So I guess we'll jump straight in, Steve.
Yep, absolutely.
How excited are you for... What are your thoughts?
So I guess we didn't really know, was it a complete reboot? Was it just a bit of a dust down, you know? And I think actually I'm excited that the core is the same, but actually there's some fundamental changes in quite some key areas with the intent to kind of make the game simpler, more balanced, more fun. But yeah, no, and obviously Crusade is something I'm all over, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the fact that they are refining the existing system is really exciting. You know, all your codexes are still going to be current until they're replaced, obviously. All your armies are still going to be valid. All your, you know, battle mats are still going to be... Oh, no, wait, they're not.
Get the scissors out.
Yeah, exactly. I'll kind of come on to that. No, let's talk about that now. Right. If you started this episode with your scissors in hand, your battle mat in front of you, and you're thinking, just listen to Ashes of the Imperium while I cut up my mat, then stop. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater quite yet.
You've got a nice bit of space to put your beer down.
Exactly.
Put your measuring stick in your dice. I'm kind of intrigued, actually, that if we got this metric of the kill team board size, you know, maybe we're seeing some new boards coming or some new mats that fit around that side. That would be interesting.
Okay, fine. I'm willing to be wrong. You know, it's happened once or twice in my lifetime, but I just don't see it happening. I don't see Games Workshop taking on the map producers. They've had a foray in mats, and we haven't seen one since, have we? They've built two, I think. A 4x4 40k one with the kind of Arctic space station, and then that Chaos Star, the kind of lavery Chaos Star one for Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
We've seen two in a long period. Are they gonna take the Matt's world by storm? I just don't see it happening.
I think for me, the intent is to means more people can play because it's a slightly smaller playing area. So people can just say it's close enough to my dining room table that we can just play on it without the need to go and buy hardboard and all that complication.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of comes back to one of the kind of core themes of Games Workshop rules is that they've always said we provide you with like the sandbox and a few kind of lefts and rights of arc to play around in, but don't be afraid to use them as a way to play with your toys, essentially. And what they're saying is if you want to play a kind of full scale game of 40K on your tabletop, you can, on your kind of kitchen table, you can, within, you know, if your table happens to measure 44 by 60. Now, I can see them saying, as they've always said to, you know, players out there, the community, you can always tweak the rules to suit whatever you want. I can see them say, and in this tournament, we're going to be doing 6x4 because that's what we've deemed, you know, it's the minimum size and that's what we've deemed. But we are kind of, we are rabbit holing about table sizes somewhat. So that's not the only thing that's changed. And I think what we'll do is we'll kind of bounce through some of the major changes. And that's table size done. What else has changed?
Battle sizes themselves.
Battle sizes, yeah. So they've now named their kind of battle sizes. So whereas you might be like, okay, I'm going to play a 2,000 point army, that's now called a Strike Force game. And it's quite interesting that it goes Combat Patrol, Incursion, Strike Force, and Onslaught. And listening to the stream, what essentially they're saying is anything below, and so Combat Patrol's 500, Incursion's 1,000, Strike Force is 2,000, and Onslaught's 3,000. And essentially anything below Combat Patrol, play Kill Team. And if you're looking at kind of upscaling your games of Kill Team, and you want, you know, let's say you've got a Kill Team, and you've got like a Kill Team with Shadow Spear Space Marine, you know, the kind of Vanguard Space Marines, and you've got a Kill Team of, you know, Primaris Space Marines, and you think, oh, maybe if I just add this and add that, and then maybe a character, I've got a small army. How do I play that in Kill Team? Well, you don't, because it's more than a Kill Team. And what they're saying is, hey, here is a way of playing that is a kind of self-contained game system. Game system, wrong word. Self-contained play style. So Combat Patrol is a thing. And they've specifically said that they want Combat Patrol to feel like it is its own game. So let's play a game of Combat Patrol 40K rather than let's play a game where we play 400 points of 40K and it doesn't quite work.
Yes, yes. I'm very excited about Combat Patrol. I think for me, I'm not a tournament player, and 2,000 points is a lot to do, and I think for me it tangles me up with stratagems and overlaying stuff, and I just want to make my stories. And for me, Combat Patrol, if that becomes much more of a known way of playing, the ability to make lots of smaller themed forces is huge bonus for me, and you know, and a smaller table as well. I think, you know, a busier table with fewer people on. Yeah, no, I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, and kind of going back to the table size thing, Combat Patrol is two Kill Team boards put together, and that is super achievable. And that's to play a game's kind of up to 1 hour. The thing that I'm most excited about is just a kind of a notch above that. That's Incursion. So that's 1,000 points, up to 2 hours per game. And that's really cool, because it's quite easy to snatch it's quite easy to snatch 2 hours here or there, isn't it? But actually playing a 2,000 point army, it says up to 3 hours here. But, you know, by the time you've set everything up, chatted, had a cup of tea, played a few turns, you know, these things can take, like a casual game, can take, you know, 4+ hours sometimes.
Yeah.
And almost, if you're playing Incursion, you still get the additional, you know, you still get cups of tea and Incursion. Cups of tea and Incursion aren't banned. They're positively encouraged.
We've not seen the rules yet.
We haven't seen the rules and cups of tea. Oh, God. Games Workshop have ruined my brews. With all that extra faff laid on top of Incursion, it might take you as long as an eighth edition 2,000 point game may have taken, but you're still getting a good experience, and it's just kind of more encapsulated in that kind of time bubble. And then Strike Force is the 2,000 points, you know, the kind of up to 3 hours traditional kind of normal game, let's say. But actually, again, that's a misnomer, isn't it? There is no normal. And I think that's something that I guess you feel quite strongly about in terms of, you know, wanting to, what is normal? Because people assume normal, or there are certain people that assume that normal is 2,000 points, Strike Force, competitively focused, match play, balanced game system, balanced missions. You know, if you're not trying to win, you're not playing, you know, that kind of thing. It's not in a kind of win at all costs, like mentality of being, in inverted commas, that guy. More like, it's just a different mentality, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, people at my club play matched play, like 1500 points or something around there, because by the time, like you say, by the time everyone's rocked up, got set up, played, caught up, page of subs, add a can of pop, and you know, you can't, 2000 points is a lot to do in the evening at the club. But they, you know, I'm in that chat, and it'll be, I'm bringing this, you bring in that, get the box of city terrain out, pop it down, off we go. And that's, you know, that's really important. You know, they've not had to have a long conversation about, what happened in the last game, you know, what are the objectives for this, how does it fit in with the bigger campaign, then want to do that. So you don't have to do that. And I think for me, Incursion fits into that really nicely, and that you could just say Incursion, we know the tabletop size. I mean, there's things like sneaking ahead here, but, you know, fixing things like command points and all those kind of things are just going to make it much easier to hit the table and have a play.
Yeah, definitely.
And just, you know, for new players especially, I think.
Yeah, I think it's kind of streamlined, and that's, again, it's what they kind of refer to on the Twitch stream, is that it's still 40k. It's just kind of they've taken the better bit, they've taken the good bits and streamlined them, made them better, and they've taken the bits they wanted to change and hopefully improve them. And then kind of just finishing off on game size, all the way up to Onslaught, kind of up to 4 hours or so, 3,000 points. And the message there is, if you want to play more than 3,000 points, well, kind of that's what Apocalypse is for.
Yeah.
And, you know, 3,000 points is really the kind of the limit of where 40k works as a game system. You know, obviously you can go to 3,500 or whatever, but like if you want to start pushing 4,000 points, then the kind of response is, well, just play Apocalypse, because the game system is designed, that game system is a dedicated system specific to that kind of playstyle.
Yeah.
And you will likely have a more enjoyable, faster game. I mean, we've probably all been involved, you know, you, me, and our listeners have probably been involved in those kind of traditional Apocalypse games where, with the using the old system of rules, where, you know, you've got someone with a massive army that'll be like, right, you know, I want to use all three of my Warlord Titans and all 10,000 points of my orcs or whatever. Let's all meet up for a game at Warhammer World, and you all drive to Nottingham for 3 hours, and you get to Nottingham and you all have a catch up for an hour and get a beer at Bugman's, and then you deploy orcs for 2 hours, and then they go first and then they move orcs for 3 hours, and then you realize it's halfway through turn one, you haven't had a go yet, and it's nearly packing up time, and you're just kind of like, oh, that's just use Apocalypse for that kind of nonsense. But yeah, so I'm really excited about Incursion for exactly the same kind of reason you're excited about Combat Patrol, but maybe I've got a slightly bigger army kind of habit, you know, kind of when I start an army, I want more of an army, whereas you quite like little pockets of stories.
Although saying that, my Talana sneaking up in the points.
Exactly. Incursion is just really cool, because when I, to do an army, let's say, you know, to make me feel like I've ticked the army itch, or scratch the itch, or ticks the box, tick the itch and scratch the box, collecting 500 points just doesn't feel like I've done that.
Yeah No, I get that, and I think for me, my Combat Patrol isn't going to be what can I fit in 500 points and be effective. It will be the role of a Combat Patrol.
Yeah, it's like I've created a force that is a Combat Patrol. Yes. Not like I'm going to build a Combat Patrol, here's a 500 point list. It's like, hey, I want to throw a few things together. Oh, look, actually, if I added like a couple of dudes to it, it could be 500 points. It's now a Combat Patrol.
Yeah.
Or I'm building a small little thing. It's like your 40k coppers.
Yes, exactly.
How many points are they? Or how many power level are they?
I've never worked it out. I've always played games where we ran this and this and this. And
didn't you take them to Blood and Glory? Didn't you take them to a Blood and Glory 750 point?
Oh, I did.
Was that 750?
Yes, it was.
There we go. So that's about, you know, that's just over a Combat Patrol. So, yeah. Like, Steve, you're one step ahead of the curve, if not two steps. You've essentially, you're 40k coppers, and for those of you who might not have seen them on Twitter or whatever, Steve, do you want to tell us about your coppers?
Yeah, so for me, I wanted to do Arbites. There was lots of cool vehicles. For me, it was a vehicle challenge as much as an infantry challenge, so as a modelling challenge. But it all kind of spun around. A lot of it was around Vigilis was out at the same time, and that was an exciting place to be playing games. So, yeah, I wanted to do something. The Tauroxes were exciting in that they were very civilian-like, but still had enough beef to them to be kind of paramilitary. So that was cool for what I wanted. But I wanted to lower them, and then I decided I wanted to put flashing lights on them. So yes, they've got little LEDs in there which flash red and blue.
Did you add a siren to them?
No, but I had an app on my phone that did sirens and did the old noises, so you could do all that during the games. So yeah, I think for me it's like, you know, each project I try and challenge myself on a new aspect or try something new. So yeah, flashing lights with them, but they were just so cool. I had a Ogryn's with Shields, and they were like the Riot Snatch Squad. So when I was playing games with people, I'd run them in and try and capture an enemy leader, an enemy hero, or, you know, character. So the idea being is that if they could club them to zero wounds, the person wasn't dead, they were just subdued, grab them, chuck them in the back of the Goliath and get them off the table. And what it did is it's like a secondary objective to the game. And also it meant people played with their characters slightly differently. They were like, yeah, no, I don't really want to, you know, definitely stop the Snatch Squad from coming to get us. So for me, they're really fun to play. They're incredibly squishy. And yeah, they don't often win objectives and take objectives in that sense. But for me, they were, you know, you just look at it, you go, well, I need a medic. Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to need, you know, a couple of trucks to carry everyone around. Yeah. And it was just, you know, they just expanded in that way. So yeah, really good fun.
I think what you should have done is also had a button where, like on your display board, people could press it and then it would play the Bill soundtrack.
Yes.
And I mean the old original one from the, you know, the earlier 90s rather than the late 90s or 2000 ones or whenever they changed it.
I think probably have to have like a range of buttons. So
one for the Sweeney.
Sweeney. Z cars for the really old ones.
Yeah, I mean, you've lost me there.
Or Dixon of Dot Green. That was before the Z cars.
Oh, Steve, stop it. I'm coming out in a rash.
So a nerdy police thing, the movie Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
At the beginning of that movie, they play the siren noises in the title sequence.
Okay.
And the sirens start from old and go through a whole series of sirens until a modern day police one. So it just sounds like a bunch of sirens, but actually they're in order of how they were used by the British police force.
And when's that? In the opening credits?
Opening credits, yeah, of Hot Fuzz.
There we go.
There we go.
I'm going to have to listen to that. maybe we could see if I can find it and put it on the end of the podcast. Some people can listen.
Yeah. No, it's,
if I'm not probably breaking copyright laws or whatever. Right. Should be fine. No one.
Should be fine.
So let's, you talked about, let's go back to 40K rather than Hot Fuzz. So we mentioned CPs, or you mentioned CPs earlier, command points.
Yes. Yes.
So ninth edition is kind of changing the way we generate CPs and is changing the way armies kind of interact and with detachments, CPs and overall. So in a combat patrol, you get 3. In an incursion, you get 6. A strike force, you get 12. An onslaught, you get 18. So let's talk about strike force as the kind of normal game.
Yeah.
As again, you know, bearing in mind, I don't mean normal, whatever, you know, every game is valid.
Average.
Whatever. Average, yep. So you've got your 12 CP and that's a set amount, because I almost feel like, do you remember at the end of 7th edition where like formations were?
Yes.
So formations kind of got a bit crazy towards the 9th. I guess CP and the kind of CP detachment, you know, loyal 32, and I know they took steps to address that. But like the whole CP and a detachment thing kind of got a bit intense towards the end and a bit unbalanced. So if you were taking a army of custodies for 2000 points, you might have had a battalion, but you may have just had like a couple of small detachments.
Yeah.
As if you're facing an imperial an Astra Militarum army, you might be facing 2 battalions or a brigade and a battalion, and they've got the same number of points, but they've just got vast amounts of CPs. And yeah, some armies really rely on CP, like Gene Cid Occult, you know, and they've got access to obviously cheap troops to fill out brigade or battalion. So but some armies really rely on their CP. So I think having a kind of unified playing field when it comes to CP is really interesting. And actually, I'm really looking forward to seeing how the battalions, the detachments, apart from the battalions, interact with CPs.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it was a bit of a turn off, and Stu on the Twitch show in the 40K dailies on Warhammer Community mentioned it, was this whole concept that happened in 8th, which is where you'd have CP farms. So
yeah,
people would bring units that were doing a job.
The loyal 32. Their job was all their job was to do was to be a battalion.
And then you just put them somewhere because they had no real role on the battlefield except for being there to bring CP. And for me, kind of breaks the immersion for me. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like maybe sort of treading the middle ground here.
Yeah.
I was willing to be part of that system. You know, if that's how, this, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game or whatever. I thought, right, okay, well, if the Loyal 32 are going to get me CP and I want CP for my army because that is the good thing to have, I would consider having a Loyal 32, even though it's, you know, it might be, you know, not fitting with the fluff or whatever. But I would always try and justify it in my head by coming up with conversion ideas. So I don't think I've actually used an army competitive, you know, at a tournament or whatever with a Loyal 32, but when I was writing lists, he was including them in. But when I was writing them for my custodies list, I was kind of thinking, how are these Loyal 32 going to differ to, I just don't want 32 Cadian Guardsmen. Yeah. So I kind of like, I was treading that ground of like, I want to have them because they're good competitively, but equally it does feel wrong just to have 32 Cadian Guardsmen just like stood onto one side. So I was looking at like using Van Saar models, you know, as like you know, custodian, like custodian retainers or something, or like maybe using Sisters of Silence with Escher heads or something, as like, I don't know, but then they're in power armor, and like talking about all these different various options that you could use to kind of make them fit your narrative, because I didn't want it to like clash with my narrative, but equally I didn't want to mug myself off for an advantage that was easily attainable. So now that they've removed that from the game, that's quite cool for people like me, because it means I don't feel like I don't have to mug myself off competitively, but it also means I don't have to break my own kind of internal narrative or find an expensive model way to fit them to my narrative.
Yeah, no, I get that. And the game system is there, and if that's what it says, do this, you get this, then in no way at all is that wrong or cheating or anything, you know, because if you, you know,
I mean, if the rules allowed it, it's like people say, you know, oh, that's cheesy or beardy or, you know, whatever. Oh, it's like, well, like, if it's, you know, everyone's got their own perspective on the game, and that's something I think that we've always tried to kind of support, because yeah. Steve is an absolute narrative monster, lives for that kind of thing. I kind of like to play lists that aren't terrible, whereas Steve would actively take a terrible list, right? You would take something that's god awful just because it's got a good narrative to it, right?
Yeah, 100%.
I like the idea of that, but I also like the idea of having an army that can kind of do okay. And the kind of I kind of vary between, you know, my little needle bounces on the dial slightly more towards Steve or slightly further away from Steve in terms of competitiveness. But I think we're kind of both of a similar mindset, right? Of kind of, we want our games to be chilled out and fun, and the narrative is important to us overall. But that's not to say that people who are only competitively focused are wrong or anything like that. And it's almost like gamers can be quite tribal sometimes, can't they?
Yeah, you know, you would have thought, you know, when you're in the niche of a niche of a niche of a niche, which is 40k, that, you know, can you go Inception any deeper? But yes, you can.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that enjoy the game in different ways, and that's something, as I say, we are mad keen on supporting. So I think what this edition of the game, for this kind of, with limited information now, it looks like the game is for the people that want to do competitive gaming at that kind of ITC level, yeah. It is better for those people. And for the people that want to play like cool linked campaigns narratively at smaller scales, yeah. It's also better for those people.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the something for everyone vibe is strong with this edition, you know. And I just hope that it succeeds on all fronts. So we shall see. So on to detachments.
So just on go for command points. So the one thing I haven't kind of got quite right in my head at the moment is that at that game size, you get that many command points. So obviously you can spend them during the game using all of the same stratagems and abilities that you've got in your books that exist already.
And more.
And more.
Because there are more core stratagems as well.
There are more. But one of the things, is it right that saying that if you want to bring things beyond your kind of core, beyond your Battleforged army, that's where you can spend CP to bring them, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the detachment that we've seen previewed is the battalion, and it says command cost 3 CP. Now it says you get a command benefit, you get +3 command points if your warlord is part of this detachment. So right. It costs you 3 CP to have a battalion, but you get 3 if your warlord's in it.
Yep.
So, and those command benefits, the fact that you kind of get the command cost, so it costs, the command cost is 3 CP and the command benefits is +3 CP, those command benefits are mirrored across what they call core detachments, so patrol, battalions, or brigades. They're all, the command cost is refunded via the command benefits. So the cost it takes you to take a patrol, battalion, or brigade are mitigated by the sort of one-for-one benefit if you put your warlord in it. So essentially, your first detachment, as long as it is a patrol, battalion, or brigade, is free from a yep. CP perspective. Now, if you want to add more to that, then obviously you could spend CP to unlock another detachment. If you yep. want to add another of the same detachment, it doubles in CP. So for example, a battalion costs 3 CP. It's your first one. You've got your wall in it. So it kind of, you get plus 3. So you're on minus 3, plus 3. You're on 0, right? So Stu on his Twitch stream said that if you want to take two patrol detachments, then there's a cost associated with bringing that second one. And I think it's going to be costing you double. So it costs you 6 CP to take a second battalion.
Okay.
And obviously your warlord's not going to be part of that battalion. So you don't get the plus 3. So you're on plus 3, minus 3 for the first, and then minus 3, minus 3. So minus 6 overall for the second battalion. So I think this is going to help forge more, kind of combined arms looking armies, maybe? So like, your battalion is where your kind of your core of your army is. And I think people are going to be taking a battalion in most armies, because, or a patrol at least, if it's a more elite army like Death Guard or custodians or something like that, because of that command benefit, and you want it to cost you nothing. But then once you've got your, say, battalion, are you going to take another battalion? Or are you going to say, do you know what? I want some fast attack and some heavy support. Well, I only want some fast attack and I want lots of heavy support. So, I'll take a heavy support detachment and put the fast attack in there because I only want one. And, that's only going to, people aren't going to be kind of reckless with their detachments almost.
Yeah. I think for me, it's there's some strategic balancing you have to do, because sometimes you might say, I want all the flyers, but that's probably going to eat all my CP. So are the flyers now as effective with no CP to play in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely impacts it. And also, like, the way it changes the way you design armies, because before you could write a huge list, and it's how I used to do it in Battlescribe. I just, I'd say like one battalion and I wouldn't bother changing detachments. And my Battlescribes would always say, you are you've got like 17 elites, battalions only got 6. But it's because I wouldn't be creating it for the battalion. I'd just put that in there to kind of get me going. And then I'd look at all the things that I had and I'd be like, right, what is the most efficient way I can split out these units? Yeah. I can, if I move this here, move that there. Oh, actually, if I bought another HQ, I could get that into another battalion. So, and that HQ is only 50 points. So, let's go. Whereas you don't approach army list writing from that perspective anymore. You're always trying to minimize the number of detachments you got because you don't want to have the costs.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, there's other command benefits that we haven't seen, which I suspect there might be. We shall see. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Going back to what you're saying, your kind of original question, if you want to then do some crazy things like adding different units from different codexes, I think that costs you additional CP as well. So maybe it's like if you're drawing the second detachment from a different book to your primary book, then maybe that's your command cost plus one, or maybe it's doubled, who knows.
Yeah So I think for me there's the easy way in, but then there's tactics and strategies that you can build into to add to it, and risks and rewards. And I think for me, anything that plays like that has got to be a good game, I think.
It adds more decision making at the kind of list writing stage. The list writing phase is really kind of, the battle round is 7 phases. And I think the first phase of the battle round the first round of the game is phase 0. And that's your list writing. That's your pre-game, isn't it? And I think it adds more decisions in there. And that can be a good thing, as long as you're not overloaded. So on to battle round. Yes, 7 phases. Oh, goodness gracious. That's more than there were before. Well, dear listener, that's because there's now a command phase. Very exciting. So I'll just read the command phase snippet that we've got from the rulebook. Commanders gauge the flow of the battle, consolidating their objectives before making alterations to their battle plans and devising new tactics and strategies with which to defeat the foe. So if your army is battle forged, then at the start of your command phase, before doing anything else, you gain 1 CP. This is called the Battle Forge CP bonus. Some abilities found on data sheets and some stratagems are used in your command phase. Bum, bum, bum. In addition, some missions have rules that take place in the command phase. Once you and your opponent have resolved all of these rules, if any, progress to your movement phase. So that's really cool. It's kind of like the hero phase in Age of Sigmar.
Yep.
Now, for people who aren't maybe familiar with Age of Sigmar, Steve, do you want to kind of describe what goes on in the hero phase?
So the hero phase is that part where your generals can inspire, can affect, can make a difference to what's going to happen next. And also, that's also where the magic happens as well.
So, and that's magic with a capital M, not just like, this is where the magic happens. It's like, as in literal magic, so like psychic powers.
Yeah, the equivalent of psychic powers, yeah. So that's where, so that always, that's where that all kicks off. And I think the important thing there is, because the one of the tactics of Age of Sigmar is because this happens before you move, you need to make sure you leave the last turn. Anyone needs to be in range to affect somebody. You need to leave them in position for the beginning of the next turn.
Yeah, so you can't move your librarian and then... Because it goes, you know, previously it's gone movement, then psychic, right? And it obviously now goes command, movement, psychic. But you can't move your librarian and then cast a spell because you're now in range. You have to make sure your casters, as you say, are previously in range. And for some offensive spells, when you start 24 point something inches away, and an offensive spell that's got a 24 inch range, that makes it useless on turn one, right? Whereas in 40k, that's obviously very different.
So we may find with this system that if you want to, if there is a command phase only ability or stratagem, you're going to have to make sure that you end up with, you know, whatever needs to be within range is in range. And I think for me, some of the challenges around that is planning ahead, which is, you know, the role of a commander after all. It's called the command phase, but it's that planning ahead. It's like, well, I need to make sure I'm going to be there to be able to do that in my next command phase. But actually to get that close for them to in range, I'm actually going to have to weather a turn of the other player. Because like you said, I can't just go up and do it. I can't hide behind a building, run out and do it. I've got to come around the building, be within range and weather anything that comes back at me. So for me, I think it adds just that bit more decision-making, a bit more risk there.
Yeah. And again, Age of Sigmar differs in that you could, you know, the turn priority in Age of Sigmar, at the end of each battle round, or at the beginning of each battle round, you roll for priority, right? So you could, you know, player one could go first and player two could go second. And then in battle round two, player two could go first, player one could go first. You know, it's up to a dice roll, right? Yeah. So you could, there's a bit of a gamble in Age of Sigmar in that you're thinking, right, my opponent might not have, you know, I went second this battle round, but I could win the priority roll. And my opponent could not have a movement phase. By the time I'm able to cast my next spell, my opponent might not have moved. But equally, he might have moved, he might have shot, he might have charged. So it's important to kind of take that into account in Age of Sigmar. It kind of it changes the decision-making process. Whereas in 40K, obviously, it's set turn mechanics. And, you know, that's just the way it is. It's a different game. And I think you can kind of be... There's almost that lack of uncertainty provides you with less of a worry because you know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, exactly. Just on that then, so what would have been your thoughts if we had have had this initiative role for turn priority for 40k?
I don't think it works in 40k.
I think two rounds of shooting from a shooting straw.
Yeah, I think the kind of the amount of damage that can, the amount of units that can have an effect at long range and can kind of project their force with kind of such an extreme nature. I think two turns of that in a row is just crazy.
Unless there was new cover rules, perhaps.
I think, yeah, you have to read it. It's a different kind of game. I think, yeah. I don't know. I can't see. I mean, they already introduced a stratagem where you could hunker down and get in a bunker and stuff, but I don't know. I don't see it working 40K. They did talk about, you know, Stu at Blood and Glory when we sort of had this seminar for the preview seminar, Blood and Glory. They did answer the question on alternating activations. They said they've given it a go, and they just didn't work for what they wanted from the game. I don't think alternating activations or kind of alternating turn rounds is something that would work for 40k, and so yeah, that's my thoughts. Well, what about you?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I play both, and it's both systems, and I like the AOS system, but again, I just don't think I think 40k can be done and dusted quite quickly, even doing alternating. So I think to not have that could be, I think it's you've got to feel like you've got a chance for the game, and I think, you know, ranges of Age of Sigmar means, you know, if I decide to rush you under the chance of you getting a double turn and shooting me off, well, I had a choice there. Whereas if I'm just sat at the table edge and, you know, spend an hour taking my models off, then it's not really a game.
No, fair enough. And also, on a personal level, I like that both games are different.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it causes confusion when I flip from one to the other. and I move all my wizards in Age of Sigmar and go, right, in the psychic phase, I'm going to be in there like, sorry, the what? You missed your command phase. It was your hero phase was before. It's like, apart from that, frustration. But that's really down to me as a player rather than the game. I like that different. I wouldn't want Age of Sigmar to be 40k but without bolt guns, and equally I wouldn't want 40k to be Age of Sigmar with bolt guns. I like that they are unique games. They share a lot of similarities, and I think the similarities that they share are the kind of game's core strengths. But I think that having two different games, I wouldn't say very different games, that's, you know, because they are at a kind of core mechanics perspective quite similar, but they are two unique games.
Yeah.
So they have their unique aspects, and I like that. So what else is different?
I mentioned scenery.
Scenery. Oh, Steve, this is super, super exciting.
Yes.
Because I've got so much scenery, and we had Leo from Rapid Tabletop Top on last episode, and you know, he and I were gushing enthusiastically about the potential new scenery rules. As someone that owns a hilarious amount of scenery, given that I've got space for, well, you know, I have one 6x4 table in my games room. I don't have two, I don't have three, I don't need multiple tables, but I have a redonkulous amount of scenery that's, I haven't ever done anything with it. I get excited by the prospect of scenery, buy it all, and then it sits in a box.
Mate, yeah. Just scenery. For me, if we're playing a movie, you can have these amazing actors, which are the armies, but if you haven't got the sets, if you haven't got the vistas, if you haven't got the landscapes that they're fighting in, feel like I'm missing out.
Steve, did you listen to the last episode?
Not yet.
No, well, it just goes to show, because you've just used the same metaphor that Leo did.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, which is quite funny, because it just goes to show how apt that metaphor is, because you both use the same one. And you obviously, I was just like, are you saying that as a joke because you that's exactly what he said? No, you're just saying that because that's what comes to mind.
Yeah, no, I'm way behind on all my podcasts.
way behind on your own podcast.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, you know, there's plenty of amazing ones out there. I've got a shout out, Forged Narrative as well, which I'm really enjoying their 9th edition coverage at the moment. Tabletop Tactics as well have continued to put out a load of amazing content, especially during, you know, the current situation that's going on around the world. Some two really super awesome 40k content channels that I enjoy. So go and check them out if you're not already listening or watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think for me, what's exciting and what Pete was hinting at is that I think we're going to go back to this piece of scenery has this effect and less true line of sight. Is that right?
To be honest, like, I think it's just good. I don't know. From kind of the bits that I've got, the kind of bits that I've sort of listened to, they're kind of saying they didn't like the idea that you could, like, shoot your whole Bane Blade at a Hive Tyrant because you can see the tip of its wing through seven different windows. So I don't know what that means, you know, whether that means that, like, there's going to be more of a line of sight impact on terrain, or a terrain's going to impact cover more, or whatever it might be. I'm just really excited for the variety of different terrain options. And it's really, this very evening, I just had an Amazon delivery, and it was a man bringing some more really useful boxes, and other boxes do exist and are available. But I've started to split up my scenery collection into kind of 6x4. A lot of it's on sprue still, but having chatted to Leo, I said, oh, Leo, I'm gonna make some scenery. I didn't make any scenery. What I did was I got all of my scenery boxes out and sprues out of it, and I've just been like looking at scenery. But I've been planning. Oh, the plans. I've got so many plans, and I want to really use 9th edition as a bit of a kind of, I think I talked about this on previous episodes, about like, oh, I really want to get my scenery in order. But I just like the idea of having really themed tables, and I bought some boxes to basically split up the scenery into different tables and be like, right, this is going to be, I've got some of the old sector imperialis stuff, right? Yep. Right, well, I might as well use all that old stuff as one scenery, one kind of area. Right, that's going to all be Mechanicus. I can spray it red, dry brush it, you know, slightly lighter red, and do loads of metallics on it. I've got some of the loads of the kill team stuff. I'm like, okay, well, I'll have a kind of sector imperialis, like, modern board, and that can be my, I don't know, city fighty kind of board. Yeah. And I want to do some of the stuff that Leo's been doing, which is that kind of combination of the Age of Sigmar stuff and 40k stuff. So that can be my kind of, you know, maybe slightly more open realm, like kind of ecclesiarchy board with some cathedrals and churches and stuff. And at the same time, that can also be used to supplement the city fight board, because it's of a similar aesthetic, and you can just add density to it. And then I've also got some forest, the Citadel woods, and some of the Eldari kind of Deathworld plants and the kind of rune symbols that go with it, as well as the Wraith Gate thing, the Realm Gate, whatever it is, the Webway Gate. So I'm going to combine some of that and have like a kind of like Eldari jungle with some bright colored flowers and crazy terrain. And yeah, I just think there's a lot of possibility out there. There's such some amazing kits, and it means that like what is essentially some quite similar looking terrain. So like both the Sector Imperialis old and Sector Imperialis new, like they're essentially ruined buildings in a Gothic style. Well, it means I can paint one in sandstone and that can be the Imperial City, and I can paint one in red and that can be the Manufactorum, and the Manufactorum will have different, you know, different rules. And you know, the scattered terrain in the city can be, I don't know, like, you know, rubble piles and stuff like that, whereas the scattered terrain in the Manufactorum can be pipes and, you know, explosive pools of like fuel and stuff like that. It can just, I don't know, it really like adds a lot to your options.
And I think, you know, if we're having these, I mean, we've heard the team talk about it, you know, that they got to one stage where everything was super complicated, but I'm not sure if we've ended up with like keywords that are perhaps are going to apply to bits of scenery. But if we get some principles that this cover does this effect, then the exciting thing for me is then we can just say, well, I've got a train, I'm going to apply what makes sense of these two rules that we use elsewhere to the train. Great. Everyone, you look at it, you can go and say, I've got these custom rules for the train, and everyone's like, right, okay, have you got it written down, can I have a read, blah 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 blah. It's just like, no, it just uses this keyword and this keyword, or this principle and this principle, right? Okay,
yeah, both my train or my lorry, you know, my fuel rig, like, you know, Mad Max style, you know, my moving transportation logistics object applies the rules of moving object, you know, and that explosive is listed in the core book, you know, page 55, moving objects in the terrain do 6 inches of move or 6 inches or whatever, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's there's a lot of potential there. That's actually one of the bits that I'm most looking forward to because of my masses of gray plastic.
And I think one of the other things I've heard as well, which I think is good, is that, you know, we've heard the exciting news that tanks can blast group hordes, because whacking great big battle cannon shell going into the middle of a horde would be very messy. But the flip side of that is we've heard that cover will make more sense for them, maybe not just in that situation, but the fact that, you know, the cover will impact the game more. And I think for me that's great, because that's going to draw more people to make more scenery and make their tables more interactive. And I think for me, you know, I would much rather have an amazing battle that ended up being focused down a corridor between, you know, two big warehouses than it would be to just try and make mad runs between craters, because that's all you've got on the battlefield. I think for me, and I'm going to be a bit controversial here, I think sometimes you see battles being played that if you had both sides, and you've got to imagine the battlefield goes beyond the 6x4 or the 44x60, it goes beyond that. If either of them could pick anywhere on the battlefield, the terrain setup you've got would be the last place that they would choose to fight. And I think for me, that sometimes, you know, now sometimes you can have an ambush, but even some of the table setups, you look at it and you go, you can't even ambush from that, you know. So I think for me, it's trying to, if we've got sort of more rules that make sense for that piece of scenery, then it's going to make more sense why it's in this spot, or why you're fighting over it, or why it's important, or why my horde needs to be near it, rather than they might just hide behind anything, you know. So I'm really excited to see what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's you know, have you seen Fury? Of course you've seen Fury. You know, when they're trying to get behind the rear armor of the German Panzer.
Yeah, the Tiger One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, get the right name. I'm going to have to edit this out for my historical credentials. In fact, it's not that film. What's the film where they're like hunting? Maybe it's a game, I don't know. But like that kind of like idea of chasing a tank round as infantry, you know, and like that really kind of claustrophobic vibe in the city, that city fight, kind of like, you know, your troops hiding behind cover, the tank rolling past, not seeing them.
Oh, like, kind of Private Ryan type.
Yeah, maybe I'm just like, in my mind, I'm mixing up all my tank tropes. Tank film tropes, you know. Yeah, so Saving Private Ryan style, maybe a bit of Call of Duty World War II, the recent one that I played recently, a bit of Fury. Yeah, basically every tank film and game ever, those tropes, I want those. So I'm just super, super excited. And I guess like that's what this episode's been all about. It's been about, you know, the things that we're looking forward to and what we can kind of extrapolate from the reveals that we've seen so far. There's a whole bunch of other stuff to cover. But otherwise this episode's going to be like 3 hours long.
Crusade, we're not covering.
Oh, we have. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Kind of, we should mention, we have absolutely glossed over Crusade, not because we're not bothered about it, obviously. But actually I think it's going to, I mean, what is Crusade, Steve, first?
So what we've been told is Crusade is a narrative way to play your game and games, in that it will mean that
games plural,
and that the outcome of your game will affect your heroes, your units, your army going forwards. And I think the most exciting thing for me is that using the Warcry mechanic, in that you can be following a series of missions or quests, whatever you want to call it, that you're looking to achieve. There's a set number of things that you're looking to achieve, and in Warcry you can be playing yours while another player is playing theirs, and it's not about having to have an interwoven stories. So what that means for me in 40k is I could go to the club, we agree on 1500 points, they bring their army, they play their army, we pick a mission, I'm using my army from before that I want to complete a quest. So my quest might be to destroy 3 units, or we don't know what they're going to be. I'm just guessing. But I'm going to say to him, look, I'm playing this. But he doesn't have to get involved, or she doesn't have to get involved. The other player does not have to name all their models. They just have to play their game. So the idea that I can progress in any game without it having to be complicated, drawing them into the world, and you know, they don't have to read Vigilus Book 1 and Book 2 by next week, I think is super exciting. I think for me that's just freeing, and I think it means people can explore that for themselves. And actually, when you bump into somebody who's going on, you know, they've got their crusade for their army and I've got my crusade for mine, and we can go, hey, and suddenly we've not had to make up stories, we're following a crusade, because I'm imagining there will be, in the same way there is Warcry, there is a series of linked activities that end up being a result, and the result is a reward.
So, and it also means that not only can you play different people, but even if you're playing the same person, like, you know, week one you're playing against your opponent, and then, you know, week two he or she comes up to the gaming club, the same army, week three same army, and then week four they're just like, do you know what, I've just got a little bit bored of the army I was playing, so they can bring a different army, and you can still carry on that campaign, and it's almost like your force has kind of defeated, you know, done that bit of the mission, and they've gone on to the next planet and encountered a new force. Or, and then, you know, you could play game 4 and 5, and then you could change army, or you could not turn up, and they can be like, right, Steve's not coming, so I just need someone else who wants to play a crusade with me. So they could just be like a random, you know, a new challenger arise, you know, that kind of thing. So we're super excited about that, aren't we?
If your crusade is to, you know, gather information for the location of a master forged object of power somewhere, well, you play 2 games on one planet, and then
you've gone, well, it's not here, I'm off, I trot, go to another one.
Maybe the orcs know where it is, and you're
I'll go and ask them. They seem like awfully decent chaps.
If they ask nicely, they'll be fine.
Terribly sorry, old man. Don't suppose you've seen the Master Forge object of power. I'll take that as a no.
So, yeah, I think that's kind of what we know. But yeah, dive super deep. That'll be, you know, it'd be open the book, you know, welcome to your 40k rule book. Flick, 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 flick. Crusade.
So we're going to do a whole episode on Crusade when we've got more details.
Yes.
And also, we do want to kind of cover, we are going to be doing because the whole Tale of Many Painters, Tale of Many Gamers thing kind of petered out a little bit because you weren't able to join us for that one, and my work kind of went a bit crazy. So what we're going to do is we're going to start a new Crusade hashtag, which we can reveal now. It's going to be Keep Calm and Crusade On. So if you want to get involved in 40K and you're thinking, hey, this is a cool opportunity to start a new army, hashtag new edition, new army, whatever. Yep. You're thinking, where am I going to start with this new army thing? Or, so you're an existing player, you know, and you're thinking, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Or you're a new player and you think, do you know what? This whole 40k 9th edition thing sounds pretty rad. I'm going to listen to Ashes of the Imperium because I hear they're an amazing couple of blokes talking some really cool stuff. And you've listened to us and you think, do you know what? Steve and Dan seems to be really enthusiastic about this game. I would like to be enthusiastic about it too. Well, you're in luck because you can join us with hashtag keep calm and crusade on.
Yep.
And you can build up a 25 power force, basically aim to get it done whenever you want. Like there's no deadlines, there's no like monthly commitment, anything like that. Basically start a new army. You could have started it last week, you could have started it last month. If you want to basically aim to get 25 power level done, I'm personally aiming to get it done before the new edition arrives. So by the time I have a rulebook in hand, I want to have in my other hand 25 power level. I mean, it's not going to fit, but whatever. I want to have in my other metaphorical hand 25 power level of an army. That's my commitment on the airwaves. Committed, done.
Okay.
It's bold because yeah, it could arrive in a couple of weeks, and then I'm messed up. You know, then I'm hasn't quite worked. However, that's my aim, and I think you've got to have aims. You've got to have kind of great, big, ambitious goals. So that's what I'm going to aim for. I'm going to aim to get 25 power level by the time I've got the rulebook in my hand. And hey, it doesn't matter if I don't do it because like I could have assembled. Maybe I've only assembled 25 power by then.
Yeah.
Well, then that's 25 power already assembled, ready to go.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But because what we didn't want to do, we didn't want to have like a, oh, this month you've got to do X and that month you've got to do Y, because kind of like, which is why, you know, Steve, you didn't join in because you didn't really have the time to commit. And that's why mine petered out, because, you know, everyone's lives changes. So maybe you want to say by the end of the year, I want to have my crusade done. Just post up your progress with hashtag keep calm and crusade on, and we'll post up our progress. Steve's working on his Talons. I'm working on a cool new project, which is kind of Chaos Cult. Which is the Renegade Guard tank army thing that I've been talking about, which we're going to do an episode on later. We'll do an episode on our kind of Keep Calm and Crusade on forces, where Steve and I will both talk respectively about our Talon and Chaos forces. And yeah, so we're going to be working towards those. We'll use the hashtag as we do progress. And if you want to share your progress or check others out, then join in the fun.
Yeah, no, it'd be great. It'd be great to share it. And I think, you know, like you say, share your crusade. I mean, it's the stories. It's what happened in the next stage of your crusade.
Oh yeah, and when you post up pictures, we want to see like what each unit is and like what the story is behind. And actually, you could even like post an idea, post some art, like go find some cool art that inspires you. So in fact, I'll do that before this episode. I will post Steve and I will both post a Twitter post with the background for our forces using the hashtag keep calm and crusade on. And if you want to take part, then maybe that's the first thing you do. Find a cool picture online, you know, make sure you credit the artist if you've like stolen off someone's deviant art or whatever. Yeah, post us what your army's going to be about, like what the background is, what the lore is, what the concept is, you know, whatever it is. Tell us a little bit about your army. Tell us a little bit about your army's leader. You know, who's the villain, who's the heroes, whatever, of your story. Maybe there's two of you. Maybe there's two of you listening. You're twins. You're in some weird, like, you know, podcast twin club. and you listen to podcasts together and you're thinking, actually, no, I shouldn't call it a weird podcast twin club. That's a bit mean. So if you are a pair of twins and you're listening to podcasts together in some cool little club, then that's cool. That's totally fine. If you are, let me know. That's super exciting. If not, you can also take part. Post up like the rivalry. Because that's what Steve and I are going to be doing. We're going to be posting like what we imagine our forces are all about. And then we're going to talk about how they interact with each other.
Yeah.
So, because we've been talking about like maybe doing a shared basing scheme. We've been talking about like, you know, does my army, are they like renegades from the Talon? Or are you fighting me? How's it all working? That kind of stuff. So that's what we want to hear. So we want to see like Keep Calm and Crusade on being like a global community movement towards a 25 power level force in whatever time works for you. Just want to see cool hobby and cool narrative.
Yeah, 100%.
On that bombshell, where, Steve, can, apart from obviously using the hashtag like a good Twitter user or Instagram, whatever, where can people find images of your Talon army and stuff?
Yep, so you can find me on Twitter and I'm at Tin Racer Steve, or one word.
And if you want more of my mindless rambling, you can find me at DangerMouse425. But most importantly, the podcast is at AOTI40K. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can go to anchor.fm/ AOTI40K. And you can even leave us a voice message. Oh, that would be cool, Steve. People could leave us voice messages about their army.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Right. If you want to, right, new thing. We're going off the grid, off the map. So if you want to leave us a voice message about your army, leave us a voice message and tell us about how cool your army is and we'll play it and we'll talk about it. And then if you produce some cool models, maybe get some cool conversions, we can get you on a show talking about your project, because that's what SWAT UK is all about. It's all about awesome hobby, everyone being awesome, everyone being lovely.
100%. That'd be amazing. I'd love to see that.
Cool. On that happy note, keep Karma Crusade on.
Cheers, guys.